Welcome to the podcast that hits healthcare with candid conversations and curiosity. Because when we know what's schmelty, that's when we can start getting healthy. Welcome to Healthy Schmelty, and I'm Rishi B. I've spent my career as a healthcare information specialist, and I'm also a master's of public health. And thank you very much for joining me on this podcast. And on this episode, I'll be sharing some health news. Believe it or not, there's some news that happened in healthcare that does nothing with COVID-19. But of course, the major news right now is with COVID-19. So I'll share some COVID-19 myths that hopefully will be relevant to you. At the end of this episode, I'll share some positivity. I think we could all use as much positivity as possible. So I'll share some good news, everyone. But the majority of this episode will be spent on a segment that I call Health on Film. I'm going to be speaking with fellow podcasters, TV's Travis and Bobby Frankenberger. They're going to share some of their favorite health moments on TV and on movie. And that'll serve as some recommendations that you could watch during your self-quarantine, self-isolation. You know, in healthcare, a lot of times it's the small things that you do that lead to the big benefits. I'm wondering, Flavor Flav, yeah, I see you nearby. Flavor Flav, do you have any health tips that you can share with the fine folks at home? Wash your butt. Well, that's fantastic. Thank you. Not exactly what I was looking for. I was hoping maybe for wash your hands, but I guess we'll have to settle for wash your butt. Thank you, Flavor Flav. I think we're good to move on now, and let's move on to the health news. And the first health news story is digital healthcare. The government says, hold my beer. So I'm going to play a clip now from Secretary of Health and Human Services Alex Azar, who's speaking at the National Health Policy Conference's Data Palooza.
I told them I didn't want to do that. But sure enough, somehow that information wasn't incorporated into my record. And that night, in the middle of the morning, in a fog, I got a cup of pills with the drug I said I did not consent to take. Health records today are stored in a segmented, balkanized system. And it's not just affecting the patient and provider experience, it's affecting care. This has to change, and it's got to change soon. That's why last year we proposed ONC and CMS's bold interoperability rules, which will finally put patients in charge of their data. The details of the rules may be complex, although not to you all, but the goal is very simple. It's about access and choice. Patients should be able to access their electronic medical record at no cost, period.
So once again, that was Secretary of Health and Human Services Alex Azar speaking at an event known as Data Palooza in the middle of February 2020. Oh, what innocent carefree times that was, February 2020, when the government had known for a few weeks about the spread of COVID-19, but we all thought it was only in China. Anyways, around Monday of March 9th, Secretary of Health and Human Services Alex Azar released rules to allow patients to download their electronic health records and health data onto their phones. These rules take effect in 2022. And exactly as Alex Azar said, they put the health and patient experience in control of the people. And when he was going around touting this, there were some industry leaders in the private sector that started denouncing some of their opposition to these rules. And the primary opposition is coming from companies that would be competing with the government. They'd be competing in the private market in this space of creating mobile apps for patient health data. And what these companies are saying is that having the government provide all this data would allow bad actors to hack the data. These companies are Google, Amazon, Apple, and the EMR, electronic medical record company, Epic. It should be noted, however, that if the government is going to do this, as they say now they're going to do in 2022, then these companies, this would be taking away from them a huge part of the market share. So I think it is kind of understandable that there'd be some private sector reluctance to these rules. If you're curious, though, about your digital healthcare rights, the Health and Human Services has a webpage, and I'll have that at the TLDR for this episode at rishib.com, TLDR being too long, didn't read. For all you non-Reddit folks out there. Okay, the next story, we're spending a little bit of time with sharing some myths related to COVID-19. So COVID-19, that is the disease caused by the virus SARS-CoV-2. Let's listen to a related story from The Hill.
Healthcare company Banner Health announced Monday that a patient had died and his wife was in critical condition after they apparently took an anti-malaria drug touted by President Trump as a possible cure for coronavirus without a doctor's prescription. In a statement, the company urged against Americans taking drugs for which they are not prescribed in response to the coronavirus epidemic, which has sickened thousands of people across the country. The chemical, which is available in tablet form as an anti-malaria drug, is also used as a cleaning chemical.
Okay, once again, that was a story from The Hill that was talking about a couple from Arizona. They ingested fish cleaner solution thinking that because it had similar materials and components to one of the therapeutic drugs that are right now being tested to treat COVID-19, this couple thought that taking the fish cleaner solution would prevent them from getting COVID-19. And this, unfortunately, was kind of the couple kind of misunderstanding the facts about these drugs. The man from this couple ended up dying, and the woman is now in critical condition. So this leads to the first myth. Everything you read in here should be taken as fact. So this couple from Arizona, they cited a press conference from one of the White House's coronavirus task force. And in this press conference, Trump, he said that he thinks these drugs that are being tested are going to be a miracle. They're miracle drugs. So before taking action, when you hear something, you want to make sure that you're looking for more articles that back those comments that you're hearing. And also, preferably, you'd be checking with a doctor first, especially before you're ingesting something. This kind of leads me to a larger point. Some of you may be aware that on social media, there's a couple hashtags that are trending. Hashtag COVIDiots, C-O-V idiots, and then also hashtag China virus. And so when you're taking in information, I think one of the things that's kind of hard to kind of deal with, especially in these times, is how even in the middle of this pandemic, things kind of get filtered through the war. And the war that I'm talking about is the war between the liberals and the conservatives, the never-ending war. And the thing to kind of keep in perspective is that some of the kind of statements and stuff that come out as part of this war is some reductionism that will muddy some of the perceptions and muddy some of the information that's being sent. And so as a person that's ingesting the information, your willingness to accept certain news that doesn't align with your assumptions could be affected. When really, maybe it can all be true that the Chinese government is hiding the real numbers. COVID doesn't only impact Asians. It would be great if the economy didn't have to tank while we battle this pandemic. And social distancing is our best hope right now. Maybe those are all things that could all be true altogether all at once, and they don't have to be filtered through attacking one group of people for not really appreciating what it takes to handle this disease, what it takes to handle any kind of disease, what exactly is public health, and what exactly are the concerns for the market and the economy. Maybe those are all things that everyone could appreciate altogether and maybe do a little bit better in appreciating all that. But, you know, this kind of loss of perception, it makes people seek a quote-unquote miracle during a time when people are prone to feel feelings of mass hysteria, which takes us to the next myth. There are miracle drugs. So currently, there are no drugs that have been proven to treat COVID-19. The drugs that this Arizona couple were interested in are chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine. You've probably heard these names buzzing around quite a bit. There's a lot of hope for these drugs. But a little bit about them. They are approved for malaria and arthritis currently, not for COVID-19. Early on, there were some signs that the drugs could help people who had already developed severe symptoms of COVID-19. But after some further tests, the evidence doesn't look really promising. For example, here at my hometown of Ann Arbor, Michigan, there is a large hospital system, the University of Michigan, that does a lot of research, and they published an article about how the signs don't look very promising for chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine. But they did note, however, that it could be useful for a handful of patients that are having severe symptoms, but also they meet certain criteria. So before you're pursuing something, you want to make sure you check with a doctor, because as this University of Michigan article noted, taking chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine could make you ineligible to take other drugs in the near future. Okay, the next myth, you can't take ibuprofen anymore. So, talking a little bit more about drugs, in February, as the country was gearing up for this pandemic, there was a lot of recommendations for people to kind of build up stockpiles, have some supplies ready, and one of the things that was noted was making sure that you have some ibuprofen on hand. And that's because healthcare experts around the world can pretty much agree on that ibuprofen is one of the best over-the-counter drugs to combat fever symptoms. However, on March 11th, researchers in Switzerland and Greece, they published an article in a medical journal, and they were talking about some concerns that they had with inflammatory effects of ibuprofen in regards to COVID-19. And so a couple days after that, France's health minister tweeted out a warning that ended up going kind of viral amongst healthcare experts. And so a lot of healthcare people around the globe started warning against taking ibuprofen. However, on the social media, one thing it's really hard to do, as you all know, is take something back, which is exactly what France ended up doing almost a week later. And then the WHO and the CDC, they had to kind of go around and make sure that people understood that ibuprofen was recommended for fever symptoms, that there are no concerns. Those concerns did go away. And also the researchers who published that original article, they also started walking back a little bit, saying that their article was speculative. So for you in the public, you just want to make sure that ibuprofen is recommended for fever symptoms, but you also want to make sure you're not overusing it, just like you would with any other drug. Okay, the next myth. The biggest risk to me when I go to the grocery store right now during this quarantine are the groceries. So this is a little bit about how the COVID-19 gets transmitted. The main mode of transmission is droplet, meaning when you're around someone who's coughing, sneezing, or even just breathing it out, if you're close to those people, then that's your best chance of getting the COVID-19 disease, meaning that your biggest risk is other people. No matter what, your biggest risk is going to be other people who have COVID-19. And that's why isolating yourself from other people is your best prevention. And that's why this self-isolation and these public health messages that are going about for people to stay at home, that's why that's being recommended, because that's really your best chance of prevention for yourself and also from you giving it to other people. And on average, COVID-19 people who have it, they spread it to at least two other people. However, there have been some cases where people do get it through contact with surfaces. So after poring over a lot of research from food and nutrition experts, for most people, wiping down packages and countertop surfaces and frequently washing your hands is going to be your best way of preventing yourself from getting contact method of COVID-19 while handling groceries. So for most people, that'll do. Just wiping down surfaces and wiping down the products that you're getting from the grocery store. And you may have seen that some health experts recommended using soap and water for produce. However, since the beginnings of this quarantine and pandemic, it's been noted that there have been some cases of people ingesting soap because they didn't wash it thoroughly, which led to them getting infected by other diseases. So probably you don't need to wash your produce with soap. Wiping down the packages and countertop surfaces, that'll do. A doctor friend of mine recommended using water that has a little bit of vinegar in it for produce. And then for people who are most at risk for severe cases of COVID-19, these are going to be people with chronic illness such as diabetes, or people who have severe respiratory conditions such as a long history of smoking or emphysema. Those people can take extra precautions by setting aside a dirty and clean station for products, and also leaving their products outside for 72 hours. I'll share a video from a food and nutrition expert from Grand Rapids, Michigan, who details in length about how to do all that. Okay, and lastly, the last myth, America is too powerful to be in a pandemic. At this point, on April 5th, 2020, all 50 states are reporting cases. And that's even with lag in getting testing out, which the U.S. has struggled with up until this point. However, still getting testing to a lot of the epicenters and getting enough testing has been an issue. So at this point, April 5th, all 50 states are reporting cases of COVID-19. And this pandemic has revealed some cracks in our healthcare system. So there have been people who are likely not contacting doctors because they don't have healthcare insurance, or they just have concerns for cost. And the government hasn't really taken any steps to expand healthcare at this point. There has been some loosening of Medicaid, but other than that, the government has been depending on the charity of healthcare insurance companies and providers. Public health agencies, including the CDC, that help with these situations, they've been getting defunded or removed for about the past 8 years. The odds are if you get COVID, you'll get a mild case, and that's about 80 to 85%. So right now, all this news that you're seeing about healthcare providers and hospitals all being strained with the amount of cases that they're dealing with, this is just from the 15 to 20% of severe COVID-19 cases. And that's because there just isn't enough intensive care units to handle all the most severe cases that are popping up. Kaiser Health Foundation, they published a research that found that millions of Americans live in rural counties that don't have ICU beds. And they would normally get sent to larger hospitals. However, if the number of severe cases goes past a certain point, some of these larger hospitals may have difficulty taking those people in. FEMA has confirmed that the demand for ventilators exceeds the national supply. And the hardest hit states like Michigan and New York are asking for medically trained people in other states to come to their states to help. They're even considering here in Michigan having dentists who did some medical training during school, but they may not have more recently, having dentists come in and help out. And at this time, it looks like the country, America, is headed towards needing a national quarantine. It should be noted that a number of states right now are doing state quarantines. About 41 states out of the country at this point are recommending state quarantines. It should be noted that Singapore, South Korea, and Japan, these other countries, yes, they may have smaller populations. However, they're countries that have millions of people. They were able to flatten the curve and go down from their peak number of cases without having to do nationwide quarantines. Okay, that's the news. More healthy schmelty in just a moment. Okay. Okay, if you want to read some of the information that I found very helpful during this COVID-19 pandemic, just to kind of make sense of some things, I'll post some articles in the TLDR for this episode at rishibe.com. That's R-I-S-H-I-B as in boy, E-E.com. Is there a healthcare story you think is not getting enough attention? Please email me your thoughts at therishibe@gmail.com or find Rishi B on Twitter or post a comment on the Healthy Schmelty Facebook page. And on all my social medias, I share regular health updates and also some songs that I find helpful to sing in the shower. I'm sure you could find those helpful too. Hey, I appreciate a subscription to this podcast via whatever podcatcher that you choose to use. And I very much appreciate a positive iTunes review. All right, enough COVID-19 already. Let's get to something fun. So this segment I call Health on Film. I'm going to speak with some podcasting friends, TV's Travis and Bobby Frankenberger, on TV shows and movies that have entire plots or maybe just moments in them that they connect to healthcare. And just a note to you, the listener, just a little bit behind the scenes. Whenever I have conversations with other people that I put into the podcast, I try to leave those as conversational as possible. I don't like to edit them around too much. However, mostly due to my just tomfoolery, I forgot to use particular hardware when I was recording this conversation initially with Travis and Bobby, so my audio came out pretty bad. So a large portion of the introduction to the segment I'm going to edit out and just jump to the main meat. I do, however, as means of introduction, want to tell you how TV's Travis got his name.
Back before the days of YouTube, there was a thing that was known as public access cable. And we had a channel here in my hometown. And so some friends of mine and I did a sketch comedy show that went by the title Jerrytown. Kind of off and on for the better part of like 8 or 9 years. We put out a couple of episodes a year. So there was, it was a combination of that. And then I also stole the name from Mystery Science Theater 3000. Which had a character named TV's Frank. And that was that itself was kind of a riff off of like you used to see on old TV shows when they'd have a special guest star. It was, you know, TV's whomever because they were on television.
So you're right.
Riffing on that and the fact that I did TV for a little while. So,
okay,
I thought made sense and it was fun. And it allowed me to get that username anywhere. So.
And how Bobby Frankenberger is very passionate about how science gets communicated.
Actually, my entrance into podcasting was simultaneously World of Warcraft podcast, but also at the same time, scientific skepticism, which if you at all follow scientific skepticism, you would know that one of the big things that is often talked about and proselytized about in scientific skepticism is healthcare quackery and
sure.
And there's a lot of focus on like consumer protection and people being scammed and everything. And a lot of that, especially nowadays, is centered around healthcare scams and healthcare quackery and everything. So it's something I'm incredibly passionate about. I have a wife who's a pharmacist, so I get to hear all about healthcare stuff all the time and then the questions she gets and things that people are talking about. And so it's definitely something that's prescient in my mind constantly thinking about that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Okay. And before we get to the segment, in case you were wondering what you missed is we talk about how the three of us met is because we each lost America's Next Top Podcaster, which is a podcasting reality show. It's about to start its third season. Highly recommend listening to the podcast. But yeah, we're all losers. And Bobby talks about how he thought he was a winner. They led him to believe that even as a loser, he was a winner. And so Travis and I, we correct innocent and carefree Bobby. We also joke a little bit about our collective singing prowess because they helped me make the following tag that you're about to hear right now. Without further ado, this is Health on Film, and it's going to be TV's Travis talking about his favorite TV moments. So here we go. It's time for Health on Film.
Health on Film. Health on Film.
I am not a big medical drama fan. I never got into Grey's Anatomy or ER or Chicago Hope or any of those. It just...
What?
Not my
Get thing. Off this podcast.
I know.
You don't watch Grey's Anatomy.
I know. But it just never was my thing. But what I did was I picked a moment in a show that was ancillary related to health that okay. I really liked. And that moment was the Soft Kitty song in Big Bang Theory.
Can you sing Soft Kitty?
What?
My mom used to sing it to me when I was sick.
Sorry, honey, I don't know it.
I'll teach you. Soft kitty, warm kitty, little ball of fur. Happy kitty, sleepy kitty, purr, purr, purr. Now you.
Because that's kind of like early stages of healthcare for me. You know, that's the healthcare that you had when you were just a kid, staying home from school because you had a fever and whatnot. That's what it reminded me of. It admittedly played for cheap laughs with an adult man child, but that was one of those. I don't know. It stuck with me. It's one of those that did. And so Big Bang Theory, Soft Kitty song. And it was a running gag that went throughout most of the series too.
So if I recall correctly, I wasn't an avid follower of the Big Bang Theory show, but if I recall, that's the main character's mom sang that to him.
Yeah. So when he was a child, his mother would sing that to him whenever he gets sick, as she would put Vicks VapoRub on his chest.
Ah, yes.
And so
okay.
he got the female lead Penny to do that for him. and yeah, it's played for laughs, but at the same time, like, it reminded me of being a kid and the Vicks VapoRub and all of that. So that's kind of like a moment in a TV show that was medically sure. related.
Yeah, that's I also have not really ever paid much attention to Big Bang Theory. I know that's some problem, but I think that's a relatable thing, right? Like being sick as a child, that's like your first exposure to that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And really, I mean, your first doctor is usually your mom.
Right.
And
right.
So that's kind of what that brings up.
Well, the pediatrician who delivered you and then your mom.
Yeah. I mean, well. That's fair.
Did your guys' moms have any go-tos? For me, my mom always recommended showers for literally everything. It was like, first take a shower.
No, it was basically just lay on the couch and watch TV. And back then it would have been, for me, a lot of The Price is Right and Batman. The old Adam West Batman. I watched a lot of that when I was sick growing up.
For my mom just told me to quit complaining and go to school.
Yeah, that had happened too. Yeah, that was one. And so then kind of expanding from that. So that was a moment of kind of health and medicine in a television show.
Right.
I went from there to a character that really stuck with me, and that was House.
Oh, wow. Oh, thank God. Wow, I'm going to be a mom. Whoa. Thank you so much. I got to get you a gift or something.
Sometimes the best gift is the gift of never seeing you again.
Okay, all right.
I did start out by saying I didn't watch a lot of medical dramas, but House was one that I did. And the biggest thing was he's basically Sherlock Holmes as a doctor. And I am an unabashed Sherlock Holmes fan and have been for basically my entire life. So even ancillary versions of him, I will glom onto and I will watch. And for me, that was just a memorable character because, you know, he was the, you know, he's a jerk. He's not likable at all. Yet he has a ton of charisma because it's Hugh Laurie.
Right.
And but then he would always or almost always figure it out in the end. Completely unbelievably, but but made for a really thrilling and interesting show.
Sure. Yeah. You know, I watched that show for some time, But the shtick of it just started getting to me after a while. You know what I mean? Like, he was all like pissy and everything, and then he would have these long soliloquies where he'd have these angry diatribes and poetic monologues. And then everyone would just kind of listen to what he did in the end, and they'd be like, oh, House, that's House, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but again, that's kind of the parallels to Sherlock Holmes there.
Sure.
Holmes did a lot of the same type of stuff, and, you know, the drug addiction and all of that. But it was just a character that was, for me, memorable and enjoyable to watch. And it was, it's all because of Hugh Laurie.
Right. You know? For sure.
And his amazing American accent, because he had, I know a lot of people that were convinced that he was American that hadn't seen him prior to House.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah, that was my experience. I was blown away when I heard Hugh Laurie speak in his native accent for the first time.
Yeah. He has a TV show now on HBO. Have you guys watched that by any chance?
I haven't seen that, no. But if you want some great humor, go back and watch some old A Bit of Fry and Laurie. Stephen Fry and Hugh Laurie. I think it was like 80s era. And Jeeves and Woodhouse. Jeeves and Wooster, sorry, is another good one with Stephen Fry and Hugh Laurie. They're both hilarious people.
Okay.
So definitely worth watching.
Okay, cool.
My third favorite was expanding from a moment to a character to an entire show was MASH. MASH for me, because it was this mixture of kind of zany madcap humor, but it was a show that had a lot to say. You know, it grew from being, it was set in Vietnam, the Korean War, but it really became a lot more of a Vietnam allegory as it went along. But it was a mixture of the humor and the interplay between the surgeons and the doctors and the nurses and all that, and then the field medicine and the stuff that they would have to go through while they were in Korea. And I love MASH. All the different characters and how it morphed and changed over the years, and just the way that, I mean, Alan Alda, it's, whenever I think of Alan Alda, it's immediately Hawkeye. I loved some of the characters, how it was a lot zanier at the beginning, and it kind of toned down some of the goofy humor and got more heart to it as it went along. But I just loved that show, and that's one of those that when I think about medicine or a hospital or anything in a show, I think about the mobile field hospitals and MASH.
Okay. Yeah, I have to, you know, I hear so much about MASH, and I haven't watched it. It was on, TV Land and the local channels, they had it all syndicated, and I watched A-Team, and somehow I missed MASH. I need to rectify this gap I have.
It's definitely worth watching. It holds up. Okay. I rewatched it recently, like within the last year and a half. My roommate was going through watching the entire thing. And so I'd pop in and out. I'd watch a couple of episodes, and it still holds up. It's still really, really good. And it's all about the relationships between the doctors. And you get a feel, even though they're obviously not doctors. And I don't know exactly how accurate it is to what a real field hospital would be like, but you got the feel that they were really there doing it, because they'd be in the middle of doing something, some kind of a zany prank, and suddenly, you know, here comes a chopper with somebody who's been wounded, and everything stops and everybody's business mode, and they're getting stuff taken care of.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, Travis, because one of the things that I always thought was interesting about MASH was that it was kind of like, I remember that show and feeling like that was my first sort of understanding that medicine was a profession. You know what I mean? Like, or it could be a profession, because there are these people that were just normal, relatable people doing, like you said, zany, funny things and falling in love with each other and trying to do funny, crazy things. But then they would change modes completely, just like you just said, and then enter into the very serious business of, not business like with a capital B, but the very serious work of practicing medicine and saving people's lives. And and a lot of the humor was really dark and centered around that, and it would just sort of like made me realize, like, oh, this is like an ever-present serious part of their lives, something that they practice very professionally and seriously. And I that is a distinct memory I have of having an understanding of that for the first time.
Yeah, it's definitely a good show, and you should check it out, Rishi. I think you would enjoy it.
Okay, yeah, will do. So that was Big Bang Theory, in particular Soft Kitty, and which could be taken in some other connotations, but we won't. It was a song. And also the TV show House, and then MASH. So thanks TV's Travis for bringing the health in this health on film segment.
Absolutely.
The TV show, yeah. And okay, so now we'll move over to, from the not quite as big screen, we'll move to the big screen. And Bobby's got three favorite movies that are about health. Take it away, Bobby.
Thank you, I will. So when I was thinking about this, I was thinking about sort of, there are lots of movies that feature health in different ways. And I wanted to think, what are some movies that made me, like, for the first time, think about some aspect of health in one way or another in some particular way? The first one I thought of was, and I think a lot of people might think of this one first, is Patch Adams.
It's our mission here to rigorously and ruthlessly train the humanity out of you and make you into something better. We're going to make doctors out of you.
Well, I just believe there's more to being a doctor than memorizing facts about the ventricular arteries.
I don't care what you think. I care about my biology test.
We're not even going to see a patient until the third year.
If you want to become a doctor, we have to learn to treat the patient as well as the disease. That's why we have to dive into people.
You have a brilliant mind, and like many brilliant people, you don't necessarily think the rules apply to you.
Yeah.
So, Patch Adams, and it was the first time that understood doctors as being people who have a responsibility to patient care, okay, and to care about the people they're taking care of. So if you've never seen Patch Adams, it's a Robin Williams film that is about this. Well, it's like semi biographical, right? It's
yeah, because Patch Adams was a real doctor,
right? And he wrote a book that this movie that Robin Williams starred in was based on. And so Patch Adams was I've never read the book, so I don't know the real historical story, but I've seen the movie, obviously. He was going through some mental health issues, and he was in institutionalized or inpatient hospitalized in a mental health facility. And he had a realization that humor was helping the people around him recover. And so it kind of changed his life, and he decided to go to medical school, and he wanted to help people. That's what he did. And all through his schooling and his professional, like, attempts to become a professional, all along the way, the people in charge didn't like his upstart funny man ways of doing things, right? you know, classic Robin Williams, right?
Right.
And so so that was the whole story, is that he knew in his heart that addressing people on more of a emotional and spiritual level, in with humor and care and everything can in many ways help them in the recovery. And this is a real thing, right? Like, palliative care, if you're familiar with palliative care, is an actual, like, way to practice medicine. It's all focused on not just healing the body, but also making sure that we take care of people's emotions and their quality of life and their spiritual well-being if they're so inclined in that way or something like that. And it's very commonly built into how medicine is practiced nowadays, you know. So
I'm sorry, go ahead,
Charles. I was just gonna say, you know, I love the movie Patch Adams, and a big message in that movie was, you know, treat the patient, not the illness. And right. That was a big thing that Patch Adams was about, was treating the patient and talking, you know, because I mean, and it's taken a little overly literal maybe in the movie or pushed to an extreme where they, you know, as they're learning and as they're going through medical school and they talk about like, oh, bed 4 and all this. And he's like, well, what's her name? Type of thing. Right. Like he just wanted to know. He wanted to know people, and he wanted to learn people. He didn't want that cold disconnect.
Right.
And that's, you know, Robin Williams is the perfect person to put into that role, right? Because absolutely. He's going to give you that just sincerity, and he can also be the clown. So yeah, I that's a great choice. I love that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It sort of changed the way I look at things. Like, I think I just recently was in the hospital. My wife went and got her gallbladder removed. It's a simple thing, but when you're in the hospital for surgery, nobody wants to be there. When you're in the hospital for almost anything, nobody wants to be there. But I've come to realize recently that nurses are like some of the greatest people in the world, because their job basically is like this, right? Their job is to make your experience, your life as easy as possible, make this whole terrible thing that you're going through as easy as possible. You know?
Yeah. And, nurses are fantastic people. Yeah. So I work for a hospital system, and I work for the system office, and we're going through a project that impacts all our hospitals throughout the country. And we're in this phase of this implementation where the hospital staff call the system office for help with certain things. Mm. And 99.9999% of the calls is coming from nurses. And if there is a doctor, there's like a nurse who's like, you could hear the nurse like talking, right. telling the doctor like what the problem is and what all the details are. And yeah, huge shout out to the nurses. Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. So my second movie, and you're going to start to notice a theme here. my second movie is Awakenings, also starring Robin Williams.
Can you hear me? Does he ever speak to you?
Of course not. Not in words.
No change, date 9/11/44.
Your patients, doctor, haven't moved in decades.
What I believe, what I know, is these people are alive inside.
How do you know that, doctor?
Are either of you familiar with the movie Awakenings?
No. I am, yes.
So Awakenings is based on, I can't remember the name of the book. I should have written this down, but I think it might be the book of the same name. But it's a book that was written by Oliver Sacks. He's a very famous psychologist who is very famous for dealing with like really strange presentations of neurology and neuropathophysiology and every, you know, like weird things that happen to you in the brain, like very bizarre. And Awakenings right. was sort of an account of Oliver Sacks, real life account of patients that that he was dealing with that were basically in a catatonic state. I think specifically he was dealing with patients that were that way because of an injury, but that's besides the point. The point is that I called out this movie because of its focus on mental health, and it was the first time that I eventually ended up getting a degree, and my first degree was in psychology, and I think this movie was very much in large part influential in that decision of mine, because it was the first time that I started to realize how important mental health is after seeing this movie, and also understanding how the brain influences our behavior so much. Like there's such an interconnected, like how dependent on the actual neurology and of our brain it is, because that's our brain, right? Our brain is neurology.
right.
So it just changed the whole way that I looked at our brains and psychology and everything. And
yeah, I didn't know. So I wasn't aware of this movie. I knew that Robin Williams and Robert De Niro had worked together, but I never went back to like look for what specific movie that was. But now that I know that there's an Oliver Sacks connection, I definitely have to check it out. One of my first episodes of my podcast was about, I don't even remember where I stumbled upon this, but Oliver Sacks had done some stuff about how like people who are like, you know, deemed to be like kind of like far gone in their mental health problem, whatever it was, he would play them music and or like certain like audio stimulus. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden they would respond and they would have like they would say sentences and they hadn't like spoken in like years and stuff like that. And so now that I know about that, I definitely have to check that out.
Yeah. So Robin Williams plays the Oliver Sacks character in this movie. I don't remember if he's actually named that. He might not be. Okay. But
he's not.
What were you saying, Travis?
Oh, I was just going to say, no, he's not named Oliver Sacks.
Yeah, but the character he's playing is Oliver Sacks. And Robert De Niro plays like the primary patient that the whole case study was on. It's very, very interesting. He comes up with like this way to wake people. It's called awakenings because he's figured out how to wake these patients out of their catatonic state, which everybody thought that they were just done with. And it's a chemical way using a drug called L-Dopa. Anyway, that's going deep into the weeds. The third one that I thought of has to do with health and relationships.
Okay.
It's also got a Robin Williams connection. This was completely on accident, by the way. You won't believe me, but it seriously was completely on accident. I didn't realize this until after the fact. But it's Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yes.
Marriage is ending.
My marriage is not ending. It's just on hiatus.
To put his family back together, Daniel Hillard needed a job.
Do you have any special skills?
I do voices.
Yes!
Nancy and I are still looking for the other half of my head.
Look at me right now, Moneypenny. I want to undo that bow and get to know you.
Mr. Hillard, do you consider yourself humorous?
I used to.
And a decent home for his kids.
How do you like it?
Can't you just tell Mom you're sorry?
But he found a way.
I'm placing an ad for a housekeeper.
Housekeeper? Could you make me a woman?
To have both.
Wow.
Let's pray.
Hello? Euphigenia Doubtfire.
Another great one.
So, yes. Mrs. Doubtfire is a great movie. It's one of my wife's favorite movies. It's hilarious. Robin Williams is at one of his finest in this movie. It totally stands up. You should make it a point to watch this movie at least once a year. But the thing that I love about this movie is how accurately it depicts relationships, not just in particular a marriage, but a marriage and how marriages can sometimes not go perfectly in the way that we plan them to, and how that can affect family and everything. And this has a lot to do with emotional health and the health of a family unit and how complicated it can be.
Mm-hmm.
Because so if you've not seen Mrs. Doubtfire, then stop listening to this right now and go out there. but you'll know that the whole premise of the movie is that Robin Williams' wife, who's the actress, escapes me now. What was her name?
Sally Field.
Sally Field, of course. They have a divorce. They're getting a divorce. And one of the things I love just about that is that it's not just every time you see a divorce in movies, it's always because so and so cheated on so and so or something like really big or dramatic happened. But this movie is just like she just fell out of love with him. Like it's just not working anymore. And that's so real, right?
Right.
like like she married him because of he's this funny guy who's like fun loving, but now they have a family and she needs him to be something else and something that he isn't and maybe can't be. And so it's not working. And that's the whole movie is him having to deal with that and the family having to deal with that and there being kids involved and how that impacts how they have to work things out with each other and they don't want to or she doesn't want to, but then she realizes she needs to, like all this stuff. And it's very like behind the comedy and everything, there's this very serious like veneer of like this is a serious problem that people really have to deal with all the time.
Well, and
you know. Sorry, Travis.
Go ahead.
I just have to commend Bobby for, I want to say, maybe 5 minutes of describing Mrs. Doubtfire without explaining that in your description that Robin Williams dresses up as a woman. So
right.
You repainted the whole movie, so yeah, kudos right. to you.
No, I was just going to say, like, it's amazing how, you're right, how seriously it takes the whole family dynamic. In a movie that is as ridiculous as Robin Williams pretending to be an elderly Scottish woman to be able to spend time with his kids.
Right.
And, you know, but
It's because it's taking it. It's that's extreme. Right. But what at the core of what he's doing is he just wants to be with his kids.
Yes, exactly. Right. Yep.
That was going to be my point. To that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's where I was kind of going. It's like, it takes things to an extreme, but it's incredibly relatable source. Like the core of it is very relatable and real and real in a way that movies, especially at that point in this was 1993, didn't deal with things like the family dynamic and divorce that way. TV shows really didn't either. Cause right. You're right. It was always some big blow up, some big reason why people were getting divorced and not just, we don't love each other anymore. You know, and he, there was a little bit of like the, he's kind of a man child in a way, like,
yeah,
not
there was
super
like an
responsible,
there was like an inciting incident, right? Like mm-hmm. that causes to be the last straw, but that,
right.
you know, that wasn't really the core of the problem. And they made that clear in the movie. And so,
and you're right. And that's what helped make that movie still watchable and still good, almost 30 years later.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, I believe that was your three.
Yep.
If I'm not mistaken. Yes. So just as a recap, that was as a singular recap, these are all Robin Williams movies. So rush out to your local Netflix and make sure you get all the Robin Williams movies. But that was Patch Adams, Awakenings, and Mrs. Doubtfire. Thank you so much, Bobby, for bringing back up Mrs. Doubtfire. It was Lion King and Mrs. Doubtfire. I drove those VHS tapes to the ground when we had them. So thank you so much.
Yeah.
Okay. And so I want to thank TV's Travis and Bobby for coming on. And how about we get into some of your plugs, what podcasts you guys got, what shows you guys got cooking in the fire. But I want you to do your plugs, but also address a silly question at the same time. The silly question being, if you were to make your own holiday, what would the tradition or traditions be for the holiday that you made up? And we'll start with you, Travis.
Oh, okay. Man, I don't know what to tackle first, the question or the plugs. I'll do the question first. So if I had to make my own holiday, my holiday would be centered around one of the traditions would be a breakfast.
Nice.
Because you always get, I mean, Thanksgiving's got dinner. Christmas has every holiday. It's all about dinner with the exception of Halloween, which is all about candy. I want something focused around breakfast. Everyone gets together, you get your pancakes and your waffles and all those breakfast foods and all the exotic breakfast foods too, the stuff that you don't normally get.
I'm signing up for your call, Travis. I love it.
Absolutely. Eggs Benedict all around the table. Yeah, that is going to be the center.
I'm trying not to be mad at you right now because I love breakfast and that was going to be one around mine. So I'm, but I can't be mad at you because, you know, also I would adopt this into my family culture immediately.
Yep. So we'll have breakfast around the weight you haven't seen table. Cause that's my show.
Nicely done, sir. Wow.
I do a weekly podcast discussing movies, but I make sure, and it's always somebody's first time seeing the movie. So we get to see a movie through somebody's eyes for the first time. Just recently this week, in fact, was an episode where I got to be the one who had never seen the movie before, and it was the movie Amelie. And I don't know if either of you have seen that, but I knew nothing about it going in. I loved it. I had the wonderful Amy Frost on. It was her favorite movie of all time. So she suggested it. We did that. And that's the kind of thing. I like to just talk movies with people, and it's really fun to show someone a movie for the first time and get their reaction to it. Most of the time they like them. One or two times they don't, but
you know. Okay, cool. Yeah. And I saw the How the Grinch Stole Christmas, the original cartoon, for the first time.
Yes. Yep. You were on. You know, and we've talked about maybe having you on for another one. Bobby, I definitely have some ideas of stuff. I would love to have you on the show as well.
Yeah, I will do it. Definitely. That would be
it's
a blast.
It's a lot of fun. I've been having a blast doing it, and it's getting better all the time because I'm getting to show people some of my favorite movies, and I'm getting to see movies that I normally wouldn't. Like, I wouldn't have gone out of my way to see Amelie, but I'm so glad that I did now, and it's going to be one that I watch normally. Like, I'll watch it once or twice a year now. I enjoyed it that much, so.
Okay. Yeah, cool. Yeah, I saw the first, like, quarter of Amelie. I need to finish that. Thanks for reminding. I have a lot of homework to do. I got to rewatch Miss Doubtfire. I got to watch Amelie. All right, Bobby, so let's get into your plugs. And once again, if you could make your own holiday, what would the traditions be?
Oh, I have it. I figured it out. So first of all, I'll start with I'm gonna sandwich this plug holiday plug, because the first thing I'm gonna mention is that there are a lot of podcasts I've done that are all dead now, the most recent one that I was doing is called JBYC. That's dead now. It was I've done a Buffy the Vampire Slayer podcast in the past. I've done a lot of Shadowrun stuff, but they're all dead now. And you know what? My holiday that I thought of is, I think, you know, when we have a funeral, a lot of people sort of like gather around and talk about how great of a person you were, and you don't get to see that, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
What if we had a holiday where we get to pretend that we've died? Everybody gets to pretend that you and have a mock funeral for you, and as sort of like a cathartic experience where they're praising your life.
Starter funeral.
Yeah. Practice funeral. I don't know what you would call this holiday. Day of the Dead is already taken.
Right. Might have to work eulogy in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the Spanish word for fake? It could be Dia de los Fake Muertos.
Yeah. I like it. So that's what we need to do.
Yeah. As long as everybody likes you, then it's a good holiday. Right. You don't want to be the one that shows up and like, it's, oh God, I couldn't stand that Bobby guy.
Right. Well, they wouldn't do that because I'm alive. Well, it also gives me the chance to retaliate later, right? So
there's
fair point.
Right. So this all stems from the fact that I don't think everybody talks about how they wish that everybody at their funeral, they hope that everybody at their funeral has like a party and has a good time. I don't think so. I would like people to be upset that I'm dead. anyway, so I do actually do content creation stuff right now, and I've got some irons in the fire about podcasting, which I'm sure I'll get everyone I know to plug once those projects come to fruition. But right now I am currently doing a lot of streaming on the Shadowcasters Network, and we are a media network that does some podcasts, but mostly streaming around tabletop gaming, like tabletop RPGs and board games, mostly RPGs right now. We've our big board game show is sort of undergoing a big change, but it was called Once Upon a Tabletop, and all of that is on YouTube. You can find it on the, just search for Shadowcasters Network on YouTube, and we're on twitch.tv/Shadowcasters Network, and we also have a website, shadowcasters.network.
Okay.
So you should check that out. There's a lot of stuff we do. Travis was just watching me last night.
I was.
Ew, gross.
I was streaming. I was playing in the TV show Leverage. They have an RPG because everything has an RPG now.
No kidding.
And I was playing in that last night. And I'm about to start a new one called Kids on Bikes.
Oh, there you go. Next, there's going to be like a psych tabletop RPG. I'm waiting for that.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, when you said you were playing Leverage tabletop RPG, I had to like wait a second. Like, hold on. Leverage? The show?
Yeah.
It was interesting. I enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely you get a plug from me. Go watch it. It's worth watching.
Nice. Well, there it is. And that's at TV's Travis on the social medias. And Bobby, you're at GM Funkytown, is that correct?
It's at GM Funkytown, where I'm talking about stuff. Doing what people do on Twitter.
Where you're managing, you're generally managing the business of Funkytown.
Yes. I am Funkytown's general manager.
Bing.
Cool. I'll be an employee at the Funkytown, no problem. Okay. And that was Health on Film.
Health on Film. Health on Film.
Okay, and once again, many thanks to TV's Travis and Bobby Frankenberger for joining me for Health on Film. I'll have a little bit about their recommendations on RishiB.com and also share their social medias. If you want to get more TV's Travis and more Bobby Frankenberger, I highly recommend you do. All right, listener, that's going to do it for this episode. You know, this quarantine time can be very unsettling, and it may be hard to find some little bits of happiness. I do have to say, however, with all this struggle to get groceries and supplies, I tell you folks, I was running low on milk. I use milk for tea. I prefer that in my tea and coffee. And so when I got my grocery supply run today, I did the curbside from my local Meijer. And when I got that supply and I came home and I got that supply of milk, I got some more Clorox wipes. I couldn't just help just staring at it, thinking fondly how happy I am right now, how content I am. That's where I've gotten to in this situation, folks. Anyways, that's going to do it for me. Red Hot Chili Peppers, could you maybe explain and summarize everything we just learned in this episode? Great. Couldn't have put it better myself. Okay, folks, that's going to do it for me, Rishi B. Make sure you stay healthy, get away from the schmelty, and I'll see you later, crocodile.